Hello, and welcome to another episode of Film Favorites. My name is Bryce Vales, and with me as always is my good friend Aaron Chase.
Hey, Bryce.
Hello, Aaron. So, Aaron.
Yes, Bryce?
You've been on a bit of a roll. Good couple of films in a row. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can keep this streak going.
I'm excited.
I am too. We'll see if we can maintain the highs of Gravity, but if not, that's a tough one to top. I know you really liked that one.
I did. I enjoyed it a lot, actually.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Well, as always, we're counting down three more films for my top 500 favorite films of all time list. Getting close to finishing up season one, which is very exciting. A bit of a milestone.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, though.
No.
Because we got a few more episodes, and today we're talking about three more films, starting with my 433rd favorite film of all time, directed by The Archers, a.k.a. Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, their 1947 film, Black Narcissus. You, of course, know The Archers, famous British filmmakers.
I really hope there's blackface in this. This is 1940 what?
There's brownface.
Oh, God. I might have to pick this one.
Maybe.
Oh, boy.
It's right. It's a classic film by The Archers. Do you know them?
No.
Powell and Pressburger? Probably best known for the film The Red Shoes. Okay. This is one of their better known films. It's one of Scorsese's favorite films of all time. It was apparently very influential for him when he was younger. It was an Academy Award nominated film. Won a couple art direction and cinematography. It's a gorgeous film. Just a wonderful example of Technicolor, the cinematography.
This film. Still?
It's a gorgeous film.
Okay.
Lovely cinematography. Like, big, powerful, colorful Technicolor images. It's set in India, I believe, in the Himalayas. It follows this convent of nuns who are trying to start this monastery in the mountains.
So it's like Sister Act.
It's exactly like... It's more like Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, actually.
Okay, but nuns and it's beautiful.
Nuns and it's beautiful. It stars Deborah Kerr, who's a great actress. Kathleen Byron, who is really great in this film. It's all about these nuns out of their
element.
I was going to say habit, so thank you. I had back in the habit in my head.
Right.
Out of their element in this foreign land to them, and struggles with dealing with the different culture from what they're used to, trying to start this Christian monastery so far from what they would consider civilization. And each of the nuns, it's a very small group, are just like kind of breaking down in their own unique ways. It's a pretty simple story, so I don't really, if we watch it, I don't want to get too much into it, but it's got some fine acting. It's pretty big, you know, performance-wise, just like the cinematography, loads of beautiful matte paintings that still hold up today. Matte paintings, I think, is a lost art when properly utilized, like in this film. It's seamless.
It sounds like what is keeping this film on your list is how beautiful it is.
It's a big part of it. I do, like I said, I like Kathleen Byron and Deborah Kerr. I always like, she's Anna from The King and I. So there are some good performances. The cinematography and color and matte paintings, all that is gorgeous. It's not my favorite film by Powell and Pressburger. I think it's a little slow. As I said, I believe there is a bit of brown face in it from one actress in particular. Maybe a couple examples. I think just the one, though.
Yeah.
But it is a good film. And like I said, Scorsese, one of his favorites.
Yeah, he's old.
Okay.
He doesn't like Marvel.
That's right. They're roller coasters. They're not films.
Right. Yeah. He's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I
don't know why I said that. You're right.
Martin Scorsese.
This is a shit film.
Yeah. No. This is to Martin Scorsese directly.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no. He's a fantastic filmmaker, and I want his approval as a human.
Please. All we do is try to please you, Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese, yeah. I would say... So far, I am mostly intrigued because of Brownface.
It's one part, I believe. I could be wrong.
Right. I just want it to be nothing but Brownface.
It's not that. Oh, mostly that's... actually Indian folk and actually white folk as white folk.
Why the fuck are they doing Brownface in the first place, though?
There's one character that is a bigger part and they needed they needed whitey in there.
They needed a human to play that's the right. parts, so they needed to make the human look like a subhuman.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's it.
My hesitation is the pacing.
It is slow.
Yeah. And when you say it's slow, that's concerning.
Okay, it's not like Stalker slow.
Oh, okay.
It's not Potep slow. It's not that slow. But it's
40s slow.
It's not 40s fast.
Okay. And 40s fast is not very fast.
40s fast is like modern slow.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say.
So far, I'm not, weirdly enough, I'm curious.
Yeah, I think if this is worst case scenario, and I would say this is probably, for you, your taste, probably worst case scenario.
Okay.
For this entire episode. We got a couple more.
Yeah.
We'll see what you think of them.
Okay.
Next up, my 432nd favorite film of all time, our, I believe, first Steven Spielberg film. His 1971 film, which I'm sorry, I think you've already seen, Duel.
It's about a truck. I think you might have shown me.
I believe I did show you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like years ago.
I just remember one scene where our protagonist goes into a bar and doesn't know who the trucker is.
Yeah.
That sucks because I would have picked Duel between the two.
Duel's good. It's sort of like almost a prototype for Jaws,
yeah.
Which of course it's not really because Jaws was based on a book.
It's different.
But... you can see why they put two and two together. Let's get the guy who did Duel to do Jaws. This guy was just like on a cross-state business drive trying to get back home. And he cuts off this truck who he felt was going too slow. And then for the rest of the film, that trucker tries to run him down.
Shenanigans
ensue.
That sounds like a comedy, but it's not.
It is not. Like it's actually, it's pretty tense in a few places. There's some well-staged action.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more of a thriller. I remember when I first saw Joyride. Is that the film Joyride with, what's his name?
That's recent, isn't it?
2003 or something like that. I'm probably going to cut this out, so never mind. I can't remember the actors. And Ted Levine does the voice of the truck driver.
No.
Carrie Kane. Yeah, I'm cutting all this out. I remember when I saw that. I was like, this is like Duel. But it's interesting. It was a made-for-TV film in the U.S., but it did get a theatrical release in Europe.
Hmm.
So I don't know... So I guess technically this might not be... It depends on how you look at it, but this might be considered his directorial debut for a feature film.
That's how I've always viewed it.
Wait, no, he had one more before this. One or two more. Like, I think also made-for-TV films that might have had some releases. Never mind! Everything I just said doesn't matter, Aaron.
Okay.
You can forget it all. Scrub it from your brain.
I mean, I can't pick Duel anyway.
So. You can't pick Duel, but would you recommend Duel?
Absolutely.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I think that from what I remember of it, I would need to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
From what I remember of it, simple, to the point.
Very.
Thriller, pretty fast pace.
Pretty fast. There are a couple of lulls.
Yeah.
And I think one of them actually is that scene you're talking about. Like, it starts out like tense, like, ooh, but it goes on for quite a long time, and I don't think it quite successfully maintains that tension.
Yeah.
But besides a couple of little lulls, I think it really holds up. And it's definitely worth seeing, especially if you like Spielberg.
Yeah.
I think it's worth checking out, especially if you like Jaws. Interesting to see it and compare the two.
You might cut this out. I don't know.
Okay.
But when it comes to being able to stretch out tension, I think Quentin Tarantino is a master at that. And I don't know why. I don't know what it is that he does that's different from like Duel. Because it's a long time.
Long time. I think Tarantino really... His dialogue, I think...
Unmatched.
If not unmatched, well-deservedly, highly regarded.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of words there.
Yes.
But... some fantastic dialogue, very engaging and catchy, and used well towards characterization. You really get to know the characters, even if they all sound a little heightened. Mm-hmm. You still get a good sense of who they are as individuals, and I think that helps with the tension, because a lot of his tense scenes are dialogue scenes. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to just rely on looks and camera trickery, although those do help, and he utilizes them. I think his dialogue really helps maintain. Like, I'm specifically thinking about the opening to
Inglourious Basterds.
Thank you very much, with the Jew hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Christoph Waltz, fantastic in that film.
At
the farmhouse, just the two of them talking, and it's a very simple shot reverse shot for most of it. It's performances. He lets his actors really go for it, mm-hmm. and he provides them with the dialogue necessary. Yeah, this is way off topic, but I agree.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah,
and also,
yep.
Duel worth seeing. Check it out.
Yes. Okay.
Moving on, we got a lot of good directors this list. The last one for today's episode is director Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh shit!
1948 film.
Fuck.
They're all gonna be old, Aaron.
I know.
Rope.
Okay.
Rope is interesting. I don't think it's often put on many like best of Hitchcock lists, and understandably so. It has some problems, but it's a really interesting experiment. It's based on a play.
Okay.
And he films it like a play. It's all set in this one apartment, and I don't know if it's the first, but it's a very, very early example of a film that's trying to seem like it's all one take.
Oh.
And the scenes are, for the most part, very obvious, especially to modernize. But I'm even back then, I imagine it's like, oh, yeah, there's a cut there. Like, the man's back was on the camera for a good second, and it took, and then...
Yeah.
But, and there are a couple of actual cuts in there, which I was surprised me last time I watched it, about a year ago, I think. Because I remember it being just one long take. I'm like, oh no, there was a couple of normal cuts in there, which was interesting. But it's an interesting experiment doing it like that. And since it was a play, it is just all real time. It made sense. I like it when filmmakers try something different. And like mm-hmm. I said, I think this, if not the first, very early example of trying to utilize this technique. It has some good performances. James Stewart is in it. Jimmy Stewart.
Mm. I know that, yeah.
Jimmy Stewart from... this is a terrible Jimmy Stewart impression, so forgive me, everybody. Clarence, you know, the It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. American is Apple Pie.
Yeah.
Great guy, I assume.
Probably not.
From Pittsburgh, he's a great guy.
He probably did some raping, based off of what's happening in everywhere now.
Please?
Yeah, I'm sorry. He didn't touch anybody.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. But James Stewart does a good job on this. It also stars Farley Granger and John Dahl, who are the leads. They're very good. It all revolves around these two guys who... The film opens with them murdering a guy with a rope, strangling him. That's how the film opens up, and...
From there, we have shenanigans.
Their whole thing is committing the perfect murder. Ooh. Just for the thrill of it. But because they're intellectually superior.
Oh, so they're sociopaths.
They are, yes.
Okay.
And
so textbook they're like, sociopath.
And they're like, let's have a dinner party while we have the body.
I want to watch this movie.
It's got problems, but it's interesting and fun. And we can talk more about the source material of the book. Because it's actually the play that this is based on is based on true events. So da 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 da. The two leads in the... Should I say this? No, I'm going to hold off and talk about this afterwards.
Okay.
Because it sounds like you're picking Rope.
I'm picking your Rope, yeah.
I think you're making the wise choice here.
So do I.
I'm glad you're picking it. Another Hitchcock film.
Yeah.
We are working our way up.
I actually would have, as much as I want to see Duel, I would have picked Rope regardless, because as we continue through the list, the Hitchcock films I've watched, I'm seeing them progressively improve, and I assume that part of that is your taste is you're picking the better ones, but
I would like to think so. This isn't a list of what I consider the best films, just personal preference, I like, my favorites.
And this one sounds manageable. I haven't seen it yet, but the other ones felt restrained by the technological abilities at the time. Whereas because this is going to be a play-ish, mm-hmm. I think that it's right in the pocket of what I'm interested. I'm very curious.
I'm glad you picked this. I was hoping you would. And I'm excited, Aaron. I'm excited to watch with you Alfred Hitchcock's 1948 film, Rope. So, Aaron.
Yes, Brent.
Tell me about the martini I made you.
Very strong.
Yeah?
In a good way. Oh. It had a nice... It was actually the first drink we had was really sweet, so then taking a drink from that, it felt bitter. But after I had a few sips, I was like, oh, that's actually also very sweet.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Sweet martini, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you.
So, Aaron.
Yes, Brian.
Tell me about Alfred Hitchcock's film Rope.
Well, it definitely feels like a play, like mm-hmm. a classic play. The way it's performed, the way it's written, the way it's shot, everything feels very real time, very hokey. But I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in the vibe of the acting.
A very old school type performance.
Very old school. Very it has this hint of vaudeville.
Oh my! I wouldn't go that.
It has this hint of melodrama.
Sure, it is theatrical. I will go so far as to say theatrical.
Theatrical.
It's big. It's playing to the back seats.
Yeah. I think it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. You have a smile on you.
I'm happy. I'm happy
you
liked it.
This is the first film from the 40s where I'm like, oh, that was good. Which I think is a testament to Alfred Hitchcock. I think that says something. Because every other movie we've watched from this era, I can recognize here's elements of film that has been worked on and polished. This, it was genuinely engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I guess where to start? I'll start with the pacing.
Okay.
Because I liked the pacing. It felt quick. It felt efficient. It felt like all the information. And I think that part of that was because he was trying to do this one shot thing. He's like, you can't, there's no fluff that you can play around with. Like, you have to be on it.
Yeah, keep moving. Yeah.
And so because of that, it didn't bore me, really. There were places where I was like, this is not as, the dynamic between the
Janet and
the ex-boyfriend. That was like, ugh.
But then at the end of their sort of their scene together, transitioned into, wait, what's going on with Brandon? What's he?
Yeah.
He's acting funny. So even then, that sequence that I agree doesn't tie in quite as much into the more tense part of it does eventually come around, and it only lasts a couple minutes.
Yes. I think the pacing is what saved this movie. Not saved it. The pacing is what elevated this movie for me. It was shockingly modern pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very just, let's keep going.
It's snappy. I agree.
I think the performances were pitch perfect for what this was.
Mm-hmm.
So if...
Let's go down the line, shall we?
Yeah.
Farley Granger as Philip.
Yeah. Farley was... perfectly neurotic. Perfectly neurotic, nervous. You can feel like... He's not a sociopath. He's just a... He's a sheep. He's a guy that would follow a cult leader. And you can see... First shot, I was like, oh, the way they were dressed, the way their body language was, I was like, okay, Brandon has more power in the scene than Philip. Philip is following Brandon.
You know, before we go on, talk to me a little bit about what happens in the movie. What's this about?
The very beginning, they start immediately. You hear a shout.
I feel like mine was slightly more accurate.
Right. I enjoy mine, though, more. But no, you're seeing the tail end of a murder that you didn't even see how it got started. You just see the tail end of a murder. And then these two murderers, you get to know them a little bit, and then you realize, oh, they're about to have a shindig with everyone in the room knowing who they just murdered, and it is clearly for one of their enjoyments. I wouldn't say Philip was enjoying any of it.
No, Brandon was reveling in his...
In his
superiority?
Yeah, superiority. And then... The whole film is essentially guns under the table. Will anybody check under the table?
Chekhov's gun, sure.
Yeah. And
only the gun is a body.
Right. It was like an elongated opening of Inglourious Basterds, where you're like, or not the opening, the card scene.
Oh, sure, in the bar.
Yeah, because the opening of Inglourious Basterds, you don't know that there's people under the floorboard. In the bar scene...
We know that they're not actually...
Right, the whole time. Yeah. And it felt like that. It felt like an elongated Quentin Tarantino scene of...
When's the shit gonna hit the fan?
Yeah, when is this gonna... When is the other shoe gonna drop? Because there's no way you can get away with this. There's just no way. The way they've set it up from the very beginning. The guy who played Brandon?
Yes, John Dahl.
Perfect.
Oh, he's fantastic in this.
Yes. Not modern perfect, but 1948 perfect.
For this type of performance, and this is the type of performance you see 99% of the time in films, because you got to remember that these actors just coming into the 30s
are coming from stage,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Coming from theater performances. Film acting is in development.
Yeah. It's like listening to rap from the 80s. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I see what you're trying to do, and we will develop it. But for right now, for what your contribution to this art form of its time period, pitch, perfect.
And it's fun, because I like sometimes going back to older films, because while it might not be... While it might not be by modern standards something that we would look at and go, that is a great performance, there is a certain charm to it. So I like sometimes going back to older films. It sounds like you're beginning to appreciate this type of performance.
I'm appreciating it because it is coupled with other things that are of quality. And I think seeing a lesser version of that helps. 48 steps?
39.
God damn it. 39 steps, to me, is a lesser version of this, in terms of the style of acting.
Well, that's like, you got to remember this, that's like 10 years before this as well.
So that's really early on,
because talkies come about in 1929, and really get going in 1930. And so it's only been a few years.
Right. I have respect for it. I get it.
Yeah.
But Brandon, I can't remember the guy actor's name.
John Dahl.
It was like an old school version of Dexter. Or like an old school Walter White, where it's not as subtle, it's not all those little nuances, but at its core, it's the same thing. This type of person, real. Like, that was a very good, of its time, depiction of a real sociopath.
Terrifying sociopath.
Yeah, someone who very seriously believes he is better than other people, and that people he is better than deserve to die.
Or not even deserve to die. Just it's his right to be able to kill them.
Even
if they don't deserve to die, he's better than them, so it really doesn't matter.
It's fine. Yeah, and he views what he has done as art, which I don't think I've ever actually seen. Maybe other than like Silence of the Lambs type of thing, where it wasn't described in the same way, but that same feeling of this must be done. This feeling so justified in the behavior. That performance, I think, that performance as well as James Stewart's? Yeah, wow.
So is this your first James Stewart film?
I think so.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
He shows up a few times on the list. I really like James Stewart.
There's this emotion that he's able to, just with his face, when he's thinking.
Great face actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in a few top-tier Hitchcock films.
I believe it.
And Hitchcock had a small pool of actors he liked to pick from a few times. Farley Granger played Philip. Mm-hmm. Actually shows up in a couple others as well. Actually shows up in one of my, what used to be my favorite Hitchcock film when I was in high school. You'll see that a little later on the list.
Mm.
But yeah, James Stewart, I'm excited for you to experience a little bit more of him because he is in some great films.
The gimmick, I can't even call it a gimmick. I wouldn't call it a gimmick. I would really call it a stylistic choice.
Very much.
That is
the filming of it like it was.
Yeah, like it's a shot. Play and one shot.
Yeah.
In the hands of a less competent director, that whole idea can come off very gimmicky. First off, to do a whole film that way can come off gimmicky.
Recently, it has come off rather gimmickly.
Yes.
We'll talk about that later.
I'm sure we will. But I compare it to the scene in Saving Private Ryan, opening. Was that one shot? That was one shot. That I'm thinking of something else. Birdman.
Okay.
That is the best. I would describe that movie as gimmicky, but in the best possible way, where it's very like, hey, we're doing this in one shot.
And they're playing with it.
They're playing with it. They're being creative about it, which is what makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
But though it is gimmicky, this doesn't feel gimmicky. Like Birdman, I believe, could have been done without one shot.
Sure.
Whereas this could have been done without one shot.
Pretty much any film that could have been done without.
Yes.
Could have.
This works.
Yeah.
This, like, it makes you feel like you're in the party just kind of walking around.
It doesn't draw attention to itself quite like other films that do this one-take style. Something like 1917.
I didn't get to watch it, but I heard.
There are very few films I've seen that try to do this. I've actually only seen one film that actually does it in one actual take without, like, digital splicing or anything. I know there's a few. Russian Ark, which I haven't seen. But there's a film, PVC1, which is an Argentinian film, I think. Interesting film. Not my top 500, but worth checking out. About a true story about this family who these men put a bomb around this mother's neck, like for like asking for ransom, like $1 million in such and such a place and time. And it's them like just trucking through the jungle, just trying to like get to the authorities and get this bomb off this woman's neck. It's pacing issues. But sorry for that long aside. All too often, I see a film that tries to do something like this, where they're splicing it together and make it look like one shot, and it draws attention to itself. Not like Birdman, which is like really playing with it, but like 1917. Which you'll see eventually. I won't spoil anything in it. But they're just... There are scenes and sequences where it feels like it really wants to cut to help the pacing, to help the geography of the scene. But they're saddled with this decision they've made of making it look like one shot, so they're trying to work around it.
Mm.
It becomes as much of a hindrance as it is like, ooh, putting you in this space following these people. The idea is making you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes you out of it. This film, unlike something like 1917, is so focused.
Mm-hmm.
You're in this one location, and it's basically like like a play, filming from one angle, like a sitcom.
Yeah.
You don't see the other side of the room, really. You got this one vantage point that you're looking at things through, and we're moving in the space, but we're all looking...
I always was to the left. From I'm always looking at the room from the left.
A lot of it is, because we're focused in this one side of the building, but sometimes we do look to the right as well. But we're all looking straight ahead.
I think that... I haven't seen 1917, but I assume there are multiple set pieces.
Set pieces?
Meaning they go many places. They're going places.
Yeah, it's a journey. You're following these people through this, like through Nomad's Land and
so
other places.
I think the reason why Birdman or Rope works is that it's in
really,
a spot.
Really concentrated, yeah.
And I think that I haven't seen 1917, but I think that the problem with going places is you don't have time to take in where you are. Whereas in Rope, I know that room. If you were to be like, hey, can you go find the... Where's the wine kept? Where was the rope put in that room? I would know where everything is.
Interesting. That's a moment that you quite...
I love that moment.
When he puts the rope in the drawer?
That timing.
Of the door swinging open.
Perfect.
And Don Jell...
Yes. Perfect. And that, you can tell that is a stage actor. I don't think a modern film actor would not understand the timing of that.
I'd say the good ones would.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't even want to say names. I can't think of any. But
there are... Yeah, okay.
You know, the type of actor who's like... Like a Shia LaBeouf could do that.
Sure.
But a... I was going to say Tom Cruise. I don't think Tom Cruise could.
Tom Cruise could.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tom Cruise is committed. If the director said, we got to get this timing right, Tom Cruise would make that timing
Tom Cruise
right.
Jumps off of air helicopters and shit.
Yeah. Tom Cruise learns to fly a helicopter.
Who's the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy?
Chris Pratt?
Could he have pulled something like that off?
I think you're not giving actors enough credit.
Am I not?
Yeah.
Who's an actor who...
Logan Paul. He's literally the only person I can think of.
Is he an actor?
He was in a movie, I think.
Okay. Regardless.
I think actors, you know, who are worth their salt, who want to make something of quality, can get timing down.
Right.
I don't think it's so much like, oh, that was really fine acting, so much as it is. It's just a filmmaker and an actor and a camera person all in sync, knowing what they need to get and getting it.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
And I have so much respect for it because I think part of it is from being in a play and understanding, like, you get one shot, man. And this has more than one shot. They can reset, but
sure, but
Jesus
you reset,
Christ.
You're going back 5 minutes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that most people, I think the average, it's frustrating because the average person watching that moment of the rope, I don't think they would get.
I'm so glad you did, because I love that little moment.
Yeah,
it's
cute. Moment.
There's lots of cute little moments like that in the film. What do you think about the sequence where the house... What did I call her? The
house
lady.
Wench?
House wench.
The maid lady?
Housekeeper.
The housekeeper.
The sequence where the housekeeper is taking down the tablecloth.
Oh my God, yeah.
The chest that they're storing the body in, and it's just like... The camera's moved away from the party, and we're just seeing her in the background taking things away.
You hear them talking about it. It was, if they were talking about something else, it wouldn't have worked. But if they, because they were talking about him, it was. There are moments of real brilliance where you're like, and it's frustrating because in modern context, that's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that it was from 1948.
Even then, some things, you don't have to be revolutionary. Sometimes the fundamentals are enough. And this is a film that really coasts on solid fundamentals of suspense and camera framing and performances. It doesn't do anything flashy. The flashiest thing it does is that decision to make it seem like one shot. Besides that, real simple, as far as its filmmaking goes, but it's thought out, it's intentional, it's purposeful, and it's well done.
Yes.
And I think you'll find that with a lot of these older films, while they might not be flashy or as technically pristine, or as quickly paced as films from nowadays. It's the fundamentals that they get right and they nail it.
Yes.
And this is a film that I think really nails the fundamentals.
I agree. The philosophical thing. I don't see many films from the '40s, but I would imagine that was rare. I'd imagine the level of when seeing the father of David argue with Brandon about the merit of, or the idea of, like, killing somebody just because you feel that you are superior. That doesn't seem like something normally discussed in the '40s.
Discussed in general, I'd be interested to know, actually, because Hitler was brought up in that conversation.
Yeah, this was in the '40s too. That was a big move.
48. Yeah, World War II ended 3 years prior.
Oh. As I kept watching, I thought I was going to bring this up. Then as I kept watching it, I was like, this isn't necessary. The racial thing. It's not even, like, even in context of the film, it's like, you're not going to see.
You're not, no. No, yeah. This sort of New York high society, high-rise penthouse type of party, very small family party.
Yeah, it wouldn't even have made sense.
No.
Unless it was like a black slave. Hey, mammy!
Which I think would be worse.
Yeah, probably
than worse. Than having no black people at all, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Now, I'll be honest, there are very few black people in most Hitchcock films, but that's the case for most films.
In general?
In general, produced by Hollywood at the time. So I don't know how necessarily that is indicative of Hitchcock specifically.
Yeah. I think that I'm coming to realize that the headspace that you're in affects your experience of the film, which I didn't fully understand that until we started doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But the times around us affect our perceptions of the film.
Oh, certainly.
So when I watched American Pie when I was 18, it's not how I would watch American Pie at 29. It's very different things to me now.
Fair.
And so watching the movies, and we keep talking about this, keeps getting brought up, but I think it's just because it is affecting my perception of the film. Any sort of racial, social, whatever, did not affect the quality of this film. This is a timeless film.
Mm-hmm.
In that simple, stripped down, it is character, it is dialogue, it is all of the necessary things to tell the story, and I really appreciated that about it.
I agree. It's obviously not set in modern day. It's obviously of its time in the 40s. But the story, it could be any time. The people could be anyone.
That's what I would love to see, a modern version of this.
I think Rope is one of the few Hitchcock films I wouldn't mind seeing a remake of. I mean, again, it is an adaptation of a play, which was based on a true story. That's right. I didn't talk about that yet.
So disturbing.
Right? Did you pick up on any sort of... What is your opinion of the relationship between the two leads?
Gay.
Very gay.
As soon as it started, I was like, this is gay. This is
and
really gay.
It's not nearly as subtle in the play. And in real life, they were apparently...
Lovers?
Yes.
I could see that.
Which, this was very bold because... Like, it's more subtle than it was in the stage production, which was very controversial for that reason. But it's still pretty obvious.
As soon as it started, I was like, oh, this is really gay.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything. I wanted to see what was going on, but they felt like they very homoerotic.
Very much so. Yeah, in the play, it's much more explicit, them being in a relationship together. And there was some controversy surrounding the film because of that, but...
I did notice they never said their relation... How they knew each other from, like, school, right?
They knew each other from school, but, like, Philip is going to Brandon's mother's place, you know, to spend time. They spent summers together on the farm.
It was very gay.
Is very gay. It's very gay.
Which I, in a weird way, I liked. Made me like it more. Because that's ballsy.
Very. Yeah.
Super ballsy.
They could have cut that out entirely. Any hint of that. Any whiff of that from the film adaptation. But they didn't. They had to
They were sneaky about it.
Exactly. There were codes and whatnot back in the day you had to adhere to. I don't want to get into too many of the rules, so you don't see the strings, because there are certain things that you could and could not do, certain things that had to happen with certain characters just by virtue of the code, the Hollywood code. So I don't want to get too much into that so that, you know, you're like, oh, well, then that's going to happen because...
Oh, I'm going to see the... Okay.
There's a pattern, and you'll probably pick up on it eventually. But yeah, Hollywood, this wasn't gonna slide.
Yeah.
So they had to cut it down as much as they had to, but they kept enough to where anyone with eyes,
reasonable person would see that they were so close to each other, and the body language of it was very gay.
Yeah, it was a nice choice. I think they handled it well, all things considered.
Yes, and that's actually one of the reasons why I like. This is where limitations can be fun because it makes you get creative. Mm-hmm. There's something almost, if they were just blatantly gay, that's fine, and honestly, that's a more reasonable approach to the film. However, there is something fun about riding the line, about Hitchcock having to be able to be like, just so you guys know, there's a deviousness, there's like a there's just something fun,
coy,
a little
wink, you know, knowingly.
It's almost there's something almost more rebellious about having to sneak things in than being if Halford, they wouldn't even let him make the film if he were to just be like, they're fucking gay. Like that
it opens up with them fucking strangling. Yeah, no.
Even the killing seemed very sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know was probably associated with the actual killing. But what are you gonna do? So I do like, as frustrating as it is that they couldn't just be like, yeah, they're gay, whatever. Using the restraints to your advantage is really cool to me.
I agree. Well, I'm excited then for you. One more reason to be excited for you to watch other films of this era. So, tell me your thoughts. What's your recommendation? What's your verdict on this?
My recommendation is even someone who is not a film person should watch this, because if they can stomach it, get through it. I know, like, I don't think it's something that to be gotten through, but you know, between the two of us, I'm the more mainstream film audience member.
Sure.
But I'm still a film
geek. Oh, you're a film guy.
Yeah, I'm a film guy. So when I watch this, I'm seeing a lot of things where I can see techniques and stuff. I would really recommend anybody who's not a film person to just sit down, even if you're bored, it's only an hour and 20, you're fine. Sit down and watch it just to take in what we've been saying and appreciate that, like, the movies that you love now, you don't get these movies without this. It's like when I watch Lenny Bruce.
Mm.
It's not funny. It's not. Like, it really, when he's making references to presidents and... I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. And the timing is slow and it's kind of clunky. But there is an appreciation that people do not have for... Not even the arts. For any skill. Watch basketball from 1970 and these awkward hook shots and their pants are up to their balls. Like, then watch Michael Jordan in the 90s and you don't get Michael Jordan without Larry Bird. You need to see, people need to see and appreciate where this art form comes from and its roots, that I think that it is mainstream enough. Simple enough, it is short enough, it's paced quickly enough to where if you sit down and you decide, I want to take this in, you'll actually enjoy it and appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good stepping stone into classic film.
Absolutely. If you showed me this in the beginning, which I know is inherently contrary to what this whole thing is, but if you showed me this, I would have appreciated this more than 39 Steps or they're so fucking... the one where they went to... There was spies, and they went to this town. I remember... Fuck, what was it?
Spies.
There were... I remember the husband and the girlfriend, and then there was a guy who comes in who's banging the girlfriend, running... They hide in a waterfall, And there's rocks.
That's the 39 steps.
That's 39 steps?
That's the 39 steps.
Which one's the one where the kid gets impaled?
Spellbound.
Spellbound. They're all mixing to me.
Sure.
This one will not mix. This is a separate thing.
Rope.
Yes, rope. I will remember rope. But these older movies, they have this, are under the same time, in the same era. There's a clunkiness, but I can appreciate it. This hat, it was not clunky, smooth. It was real smooth, shockingly smooth.
Mm-hmm.
I think in short, I absolutely recommend this. This is probably, we'll have to look through the list, but this is probably one of the top ones I'll remember and enjoy fondly. If you were to say a couple years from now, if you're like, hey, you want to rewatch Rope? I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'll rewatch Rope.
Yeah, let's check Rope out again.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exciting. I'm glad you liked it, Aaron.
So am I.
I'm really. We got this. The streak just keeps on rolling.
I know. Give it time. I know you're gonna pull some weird shit out of it.
If we can end out season one on a streak.
I hope.
On a 5-6 movie streak of just goodness.
I hope.
That would be nice.
It would be.
It would be.
I'm keeping my tempering my expectations.
That's good. Do you want me to look? Do you want me to give you a?
Yeah, I'm a little curious.
Yeah, so am I. Let me see. What do we got? What do we got coming up,
mm-hmm.
Aaron? Let's see here, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're in the clear.
Oh, really?
I think you're going to be
two.
I think you'll be A-okay
for the next two.
I think you'll be okay.
Okay.
I think you'll be A-okay.
Okay.
And Aaron, thank you for picking Rope.
Mm,
I mean, I like Black Narcissus. I think it's an important movie. I'm glad you picked Rope.
So.
You'd be like, oh, the ending was good of Black Narcissus, maybe. Like, that was weird. But no, Rope is a good choice. I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you watched it with me.
I'm actually happy I watched that movie.
Hitchcock, man. I'm excited for you to watch more of his stuff.
This is the first movie where I was like, oh, now I'm excited to see more Hitchcock.
You were interested.
Yeah, I was curious.
What's that, Django?
You... You have my attention. What is it? I'm Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well done, Aaron.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Until next time.
This has been a Buddy System presentation of Film Favorites.